You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome into Just Another Sports Podcast here on the Sports Objective Broadcasting Podcasting Network. I am your host, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, joined as always by my co-host, the one and only, ladies and gentlemen, from Alaska, North Carolina, a.k.a. Virginia. It is the head coach of Northeast Academy, Mr. Stevie Fly. Stevie, how you doing?
I'm doing good, bud. How you doing?
Hey, man, it's a Wednesday night, getting ready for college football for the weekend. Kick it off tomorrow night. The Thursday night game this week, I guess because the NFL – kicking off Thursday night action, because the Thursday night college game kind of sucks. It's Louisville and Murray State, but it's something to watch as we get ready for this weekend for East Carolina and Marshall. And Stevie, we're joined here in the first half hour of the show by a man who played, God, every year he was here. He was a true freshman in 08, graduated in 2012. Every year he was here, we played the Marshall Thunder and Herd back in the Conference USA days. Mr. Andrew Bodenheimer. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me on.
No, absolutely.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll start off briefly here talking about just your career and how you got to ECU. We want to focus really on a lot of those Marshall games with us playing Marshall this weekend. But tell us how you got here. You came here in 08. You recruited out of high school, I'm guessing, by Skip Holtz. Who was the assistant coach that recruited you?
So it was actually Donnie Kirkpatrick was my my recruiter. He recruited me pretty hard. Ended up, I was a preferred walk-on, and got a chance to report to camp with everyone and start with the team. So that was, that was huge for me just to be able to learn and grow as a player. He really wanted me, he really wanted to offer me, but just wasn't able with the whole staff, what the direction they wanted to go towards. So walked on and, ended up earning a spot. But, yeah, Coach Kirkpatrick was a key piece of the reason that I decided to go to ECU, in addition to the fact that, my family was a Pirate family.
So Donnie K was your recruiter, your preferred walk-on. At what point did you get on scholarship?
When the new staff came in, the summer, before my, redshirt sophomore year, they announced I was on scholarship, right before camp.
What did that mean to you personally, getting on scholarship, coming from a walk-on?
I mean, man, it was huge. I knew, deep down that I belonged there and I knew that I could play at that level. And it meant a lot to me, because I had to come in and earn everything. Obviously, even on scholarship, you got to earn your playing time. You got to earn, everything once you're there. But it just meant so much to me to see my hard work actually pay off. And I think even more than that, it was important to me to show my parents that I appreciated, what they did for me and, the ability to go to school and my parents were able to, to pay for school for me to get the opportunity to get a scholarship. And I think that for me, it was kind of a thank you to my parents. And, I lost my father this past year. Just thinking about what, he meant to me and how proud I know he was of me, that it was huge for me to get that accomplishment and continue to play. That was just the beginning. I wasn't satisfied once I, was on scholarship.
Yeah, Andrew, you talk about losing your dad. We can identify with that. Stevie just lost his father 2 weeks ago.
One month ago today.
Okay. I guess you know better than me. And yeah. I lost my mom back in March. So we can identify with what you're feeling there. It's always tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry for your losses.
Yeah,
same,
likewise.
Same to you, buddy. Same to you.
Now, we talked, came here under Skip, and Donnie K was receivers coach and the changeover, and Ruffin put you on scholarship. You talk about that as a player dealing with the coaching change. And but for you, getting on scholarship once the new staff got here, that had to make the buy-in for you a lot easier.
Absolutely. I was definitely nervous with the coaching change. You never know with a new regime coming in if they just want to, you know, clean the slate and start over. So I was definitely concerned. I continued to talk to Coach Kirkpatrick about things, and, you know, he told me not to worry. But obviously you're still in the back of your mind, wondering how things will go. And I just made sure, once the new staff came in that I didn't waste any time, learning the playbook, doing everything I could do to prove to them that I belonged to them, because coming in, they probably didn't know anything about me and, probably wasn't, big on their radar coming in. But I knew that I was going to do whatever I had to do to make sure I was.
Obviously, I misspoke. Donnie Kirkpatrick was retained by Ruffin McNeil. So you had the familiarity there with Donnie. So I'm sure Donnie was had a lot to do with pushing the new staff, along with your own performance. Donnie can be pushing for you to get on scholarship all he wants, but if you ain't showing it in practice and on the field, then you ain't going to get on scholarship.
It ain't happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that was key for me. I appreciated, Coach K being there for me, but I told him like, hey, I'm going to earn it. I'm going to show the new staff that I belong here and not only belong, but, I deserve to play and play a lot. And I just, that first spring, I really, really bought in, did the extra things, really, became a leader with the receivers and just learned the whole offense so that they, they had no choice but to play me.
Buddy, go ahead, Steve.
You're playing with a stellar group of receivers. Justin Hardy, just to name one, one of the iconic ECU wide receivers. How was it playing with that group and getting that group that, you guys go on to be, in my opinion, one of the most dynamic receiving corps in the country?
Yes, it was awesome. Getting to play with Dwayne Harris and Justin Hardy, Lance Lewis. We had a very talented room, and I think it kind of it helped me elevate my game. To just make sure that the opportunities that I had, were not going to be as much. That was just being realistic. I knew those were our guys, and I just had to make sure I made the plays when it was, called upon. But I think, it was just awesome to play with a group like that. Very talented guys, some of the best, to ever do it. And, it was just an honor to take the field with them, every game and work with them in practice. It definitely helped me elevate my game and raise the bar for, what was expected in the receiver room.
When you saw Lincoln Riley come walk in here as your OC, I wasn't much older than you. I think at the time you were probably in your early 20s. He was, 26, 27?
Yeah,
26. How was it being coached by a coach that young? And then did you realize he was going to become what he became?
Yeah, it was interesting because at the time he was the same age as my older brother. So, I had had to put that into perspective. But at the same time, hey, he's our coach coming in. I knew what they had done at Texas Tech, and I respected that. And so, it definitely was, I would say, a challenge for him, just earning the respect of all, all the players, especially, the guys that were seniors. They were, two, maybe 3 years at the most difference from him. So that's not typical. So I think it was definitely tough for him to earn that respect. But I think as it progressed and went on, we saw, the knowledge that he had, in the offensive game, and, that quickly earned a lot of people's respect. And, I saw it, early on, just, the love of the game that he had and just the knowledge that, at a young age, he was around some very talented and knowledgeable offensive minded coaches. And so, I'm not surprised at all, honestly, that, he's got to the point that he has now. I'm happy for him and wish, continued success for him. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge at first, but like I said, he earned the respect as, you know, we started to see the success and how good our offense really could be. You know, we just had never been, you know, in an offense like that. So it was exciting and it really, you know, excited obviously the receivers to be in a position to, you know, to really get a chance to make plays on any given, you know, play, quarter, whatever. You know, there was so many opportunities for us.
You finished your career 128 catches, a little over 1,300 yards, 5 touchdowns. What do you feel like your career game was? What the game that you would say, if somebody wanted to see my best game, what game was that for you?
That's a good question. I would say there's probably two games that stick out to me, and actually one of them being the Marshall game. Just because, you know, it was my last game in Dowdy-Ficklin. I caught a touchdown in the first overtime. And, you know, I made a couple other plays. Also, the Navy game, I think that was my junior year.
2011?
Yes.
Indianapolis. 38-35 win.
Yeah, one or two times we beat them.
Yeah, that one. I had a pretty good stat line that game. But yeah, I would say just, you know, with Marshall, that kind of just defined what I thought I was as a player. You know, whenever the number was called, I answered, and you know, there weren't crazy amounts of opportunities for me to make plays. Obviously, with the guys that were around me, you know, being more of a focal point of the offense. But yeah, I would say that one just really sticks out to me because, you know, I had a chance to score a touchdown my last game. And, you know, that was huge for me to go out that way as a Pirate.
Well, let's talk about those Marshall games. A lot of respect between the two programs. Obviously, they're forever tied because of the plane crash back in 1970. The Marshall football team, obviously, flying back from Greenville, plane crash in West Virginia, the entire football team lost. So the programs are forever linked. Talk about how it was on the field. It's amongst the fans, it's a friendly rivalry. How intense is it on the field between these two programs when they play? Very, very close games every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely very intense. And I would say, when I was first came in, Coach Holtz and the staff did a good job of educating us on, you know, the history of our two programs. And I thought that was awesome that, you know, it was important for us to know what we were going into when we traveled there, and just to understand, you know, the connection between the two programs. But yeah, I would say it was very intense. You know, it was two respected programs that have had a lot of success. And it was definitely very intense. And we always knew, you know, we were going to get their best, and they were going to get our best.
You mentioned the 2012 game. I'm going to kind of – we won't go into detail on each game. We'll just kind of skim over them. 08, you were a redshirt freshman. I don't know how much you remember about that game. I guess you were on the sidelines. The 08, we beat them in overtime in Greenville. Very low scoring defensive slugfest. Do you remember that game at all?
Yeah, sure do. Hartman kicked the game winning field goal.
Yeah.
1916.
Yep. Yeah, that was a back and forth one. Yeah, that was one. You know, I know just remembering that we felt like we definitely should have, you know, won that game easily. I really didn't think their team was as strong that year. And you know, we were just lucky to get the win in that game. But yeah, I definitely do remember that one.
Following year 09, we go up to Huntington. I cannot remember the final score of that game.
37-10.
2010?
Oh, no,
that 09 in Huntington.
21-17.
Okay. I don't remember exactly. It seems like we pulled away.
Yep, that's right. 21-17.
Okay, in my mind, we pulled away in that game. So I don't know why I'm remembering. Andrew, do you remember? Were we up like 21-10 and Marshall scored late? Because for some reason, I remember us winning that game more convincingly than that, but I could just be remembering wrong.
I'm having trouble.
Actually, I'm looking at the box score. We scored a touchdown. We were down 17-14. Patrick Pinckney with a 30-yard run late in the game gets us the 21-17 win.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, Okay.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, we, again, just didn't play as well. But, you know, part of that is credit to them, you know, giving us their best.
Yeah, and for some reason I thought we won that game more convincingly than that, but we did not. But nonetheless, it was a victory in Huntington, which are not easy to come by. Marshall has a great home record. 2010, we talked about that. Pirates kind of dominated that game in Greenville. Andrew, you were getting more playing time by that point. What do you remember about that one, the 2010 game in Greenville?
Yeah, I just remember, you know, obviously, again, anytime we play Marshall, you know, we're expecting their best. But I know going into that game, we really felt like, you know, we had a lot of mismatches on the offensive side. And yeah, I just remember us being ready for that one and you know, really dominating that game.
And then we'll move on to 2011. That was in Huntington, last game of the year. I remember this game well. We were 5-6. I believe maybe they were also 5-6, if I'm remembering right. But they were either 5-6 or 6-5. I can't remember exactly. But I know we were playing the bowl for bowl eligibility and get it overtime up in Huntington and lose in overtime in a heartbreaker. What do you remember about that game besides being very disappointed we didn't get bowl eligible?
Oh, yeah, that one was really tough. That one still gets me to this day. It was a really good game, back and forth. I remember, I think Dobson was the receiver. He had that crazy one-handed catch in the end zone, in the corner of the end zone that to this day is probably the one of the best catches, you know, I've ever seen firsthand. But, yeah, that was a tough one. Like I said, it was back and forth. I think that year that was probably the one of the best teams they've had just across the board. They had some really good players that year, had a solid offense. But, yeah, that one was tough. We really needed that win because we ended up losing to SMU that next game to not make it to a bowl game. That was the only year of my career that I didn't go to a bowl. So, that one definitely stung a bit more than the other losses.
Okay. For whatever reason, I'm remembering that being the last game of the season. But you may be right. We may have played SMU the following week.
Hold on. I'll check for you. I think that was the last game that year.
Marshall was.
I would say an SMU was 2010.
It was, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. I'm getting them mixed up. Sorry. So, 2011 – yeah, that was just a tough one because we still had correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we still had a very small shot to make the conference championship, and that game pretty much, you know, sealed the deal for us.
Yeah, there was a lot of things on the line of that game. There was an outside shot at winning the East, and it ended bowl eligibility, so it was disappointing. 2012, it was a good year, 8-4. That Marshall game that year, Marshall was good that year too. That game was epic. That 2012 East Carolina Marshall game, you know, people talk about great games played in Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, and that one does not get mentioned very often, and it should. A high scoring, just absolute war, momentum swings. There was times where we would go on a run, and it looked like we had took the game over. Marshall looked like they had taken the game over, just back and forth nonstop all the way till the end in double overtime.
Yeah, that game, like I said, sticks out in my mind as, you know, one of the most memorable games for me, obviously being my last game in Dowdy Ficklin. You really can't draw it up any better of a finish for, you know, the seniors that year. And I was able to make a couple big plays. And, you know, I just remember our whole offense, just everybody contributing that game. And it just, you know, no better feeling than to, you know, finish your career, your last game in Dowdy Ficklin with a win and an overtime win at that. It was awesome. Like I said, you just can't draw it up any better for your last game.
Bodie, I've said this before, and I don't know, see if you agree with me. Of games that weren't sellouts, the second half of that game and overtime is one of the loudest crowds I've ever heard in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. Do you remember how loud that crowd was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was so loud. You know, the atmosphere just – you know, overall, Dowdy-Ficklin's always been great, and you know, I've played in a lot of stadiums. It's up there with, you know, with the bigger programs. You know, when we played in Conference USA, and there just wasn't a stadium that even compared, in my opinion. But yeah, I remember it just being, you know, it was just crazy. The atmosphere was awesome. You know, from, you know, when Danny scored in the back of the end zone to, you know, hearing the crowd when I scored. And then obviously when we stuffed it in there, you know, to go up and then stop them. That, I mean, yeah, I still remember the crowd noise like it was yesterday. But yeah, that was a special one, no doubt.
Yeah. And Stevie, do you have something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was just going kind of wrap up the Marshall discussion here. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions about your career at ECU before we wrap it up and get Hunter Gallimore in here. But East Carolina and Marshall, like I said, it was a respect, but there was a rivalry there. There was a bit of a rivalry with UCF, not too much respect, but a bit of a rivalry.
No,
and then Southern Mississippi, there was also some respect there, at least amongst the fans, and they were a bit of a rival. When you were in Conference USA, of those three, who did you guys see as your biggest rival in conference?
Yeah, I would say, Southern Miss had a really good atmosphere. I would say probably the closest to the atmosphere that we had at Dowdy. But I would say, yeah, I would say probably UCF, just because at the time we just had, you know, some big battles against them, and they had good teams. Yeah, I would say they were definitely the one that was on our radar. You know, and to be honest, you know, early on when I was there, you know, we felt like, you know, we were as good as anybody, and obviously that's why we won a lot of games in, but. Yeah, I would say UCF was definitely the one, and I can agree with you that there was not much respect there, you know, when it came to that rivalry.
No, I was just speaking amongst the fan base, so I figured it was the same way on the field.
Yeah, definitely was. You know, at the end of the game with Marshall and Southern Miss, there was that respect, you know, and it was never anything crazy with UCF, but yeah, it wasn't the same. Yeah, it was definitely just a heated rivalry, and that's pretty much where it ended.
And I want to ask you one more thing. Two games in 2010, Ruffin's first year, that are very memorable games, all-time greats in Dowdy-Ficklin. The Hail Mary game against Tulsa. What do you remember about that one, and how long did it take for your brain to sink in that Ryan Jones caught that ball?
Oh, yeah, that was Justin crazy. Jones. Yeah, Justin Jones. I remember that play. Actually, that game, I didn't really play that much. And you know, it was frustrating, but I forgot all of that once we got to that last play. And I just remember the play. I remember it kind of just the way they rushed. They all came from the right side, and just, you know, the O-line did well picking it up, but just kind of. You know, Dominique slid to the left, and I thought it was kind of didn't make sense the way they, you know, rushed Dominique on that play. And when he slid to the left, I was like, oh, man, he's got a clear shot for a throw here. And then when the ball went up, I was like, man, that's the perfect ball. Like, you know, he couldn't have thrown that any better. And then, you know, I knew I just had a feeling. I was like, man, I think, you know, we're about to win this game. And you know, sure enough, Justin goes up and catches it. And to be honest, I think if you look back at the replay, I think Lance Lewis probably would have called it if Justin wouldn't have. he was right there as well. And a funny thing that I noticed on that play too, there Tulsa had two number ones out on the field
for
that.
Oh wow, it was a penalty. Yeah. I wonder if they would have called. Well, they didn't throw the flag. The flag should have thrown regardless. But wow,
if you look back at it, there's two number ones on the field. And that was something I noticed too. But yeah,
can you
was,
imagine if that would have been incomplete and they called that penalty and then we threw the Hail Mary and called it?
Yeah, I know, it was crazy. But yeah, I just remember as soon as the ball was caught, we all just sprinted onto the field and dog piled in the end zone. And I mean, what a way to start the Boneyard off with the Hail Mary right there in front of the student section.
Yeah, and then the last game I wanted to ask you about, unless Stevie had something else.
No, a rare Sunday afternoon game.
Yeah, that's right. It was a Sunday.
Yeah it was. So that's also a game. Another one from the 2010 season, NC State came in here, you know, with Russell Wilson playing quarterback, and the Pirates beat them in overtime. David Magazoo with the interception. What do you remember about that one?
Oh yeah. So Damon, he was my guy. That was my roommate, end of my time. He made a huge play. And actually I remember, you know, we were close. So I know he had an opportunity to play. I believe, I think we had a suspension.
You're right. Yeah. He wouldn't have been playing otherwise.
Yeah. I believe, Blacknall was suspended that game.
Correct. You're
for
correct.
Targeting. And
good
so,
recall there.
Yeah. Some of it's coming back to me. I just remember saying, hey man, like, you know, this is your time. Like, you know, he was ready. You know, he was a coach's kid. He was dialed in. And I just remember, he made that play. And I mean, I don't remember the stadium being crazier. Like, I don't think people left the stadium for a good 20 minutes after that.
Correct.
It was like Halloween, you know, around campus and downtown after that, too. It was crazy. But, yeah, I mean, just huge. You know, they didn't really give us a chance. You know, oh, it's Russell Wilson. And, they had a lot of NFL guys on that roster on both sides of the ball. And we came out actually really pretty much dominating them. And they got back into the game. And, you know, it's just one of those rivalries, like, you know, I'm always going to remember that game. You know, it's NC State, but you know, just more importantly, it was on our home field. You know, that was big for Coach Ruff, and just, you know, at the time for recruiting as well. But yeah, just a very memorable game, and it couldn't have, you know, the interception couldn't happen to a better guy in Magazoo, who's now a college coach.
And I believe he's out at UNLV. Good luck to Coach Mags. Maybe one day he'll be back in Greenville. But, no, a bunch of great memories there, and obviously the memories from Marshall, the 2012 game, your senior day, as we mentioned, was a very special game. Hopefully, you know, the Pirates, I hate keep mentioning this because I don't ever remember being talked about very much, but people keep talking about it this week. Marshall's never won in Greenville, believe it or not. So let's hope it stays that way for Saturday. Are you still following the program, buddy?
Yes, I haven't been able to get back to games as much. I put on music shows and work in the festival industry, so busy a lot on the weekends. But I'm actually planning on coming to the game this weekend. As long as I am healthy, I'm sure you guys can tell I sound a little sick. But I definitely keep up with the program. I'm always going to be a Pirate to the core.
What's going on with your health? This is just, are you? Oh
yeah, just got a cold.
Okay.
Yeah, it started about Sunday. So I'm hoping I'll be good by Saturday, but definitely plan on going to the game. I always keep up with the program, and you know, it always helps that you know, with Coach Kirkpatrick being there, it's a little bit more for me to keep up with as well, because he's definitely, like I said, it was important to my time at East Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, take you some vitamin C, some zinc, and some D3. Get to feeling better, and hopefully we'll see you in Saturday in Greenville Saturday.
Here we go.
As the Pirates play the Herd.
Absolutely. I'm gonna make sure I'm there. Nothing's gonna stop me. I got to see my Pirates play.
And before you go, what's your social media if you want people to follow you on Twitter or hit you up on Facebook?
So I just have a Instagram. Bodie Bo, BODIE _.
Okay, there you go. So if you want to follow Andrew, hit him up there on Instagram. And it was good talking to you, Bodie, and hopefully we'll see you in Saturday See you in Greenville Saturday. Easy for me to say.
Absolutely. I appreciate y'all. Thanks, Stevie and Kyle, for having me on, and Bubba. It's a pleasure and an honor, you know, to speak with you guys about the Pirates.
All right.
Thank you, bud. Hope you feel better.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I want to mention a comment up here. You were talking about Southern Miss a while ago. Kenneth Maynard talking about he misses our games with Southern Miss, hopefully on the schedule again soon for a home and home. So hopefully that'll happen soon, too. I do miss the Southern Miss rivalry.
Yeah, I it's been talked about with John Gilbert. John was briefly the AD at USM. I don't know what the holdup is there. I would imagine they would be interested. Certainly not a Power Five thing. Right. So you're talking about a home game that would have interest from fan bases, from both fan bases. I get the distance thing. So maybe not do it every year, but do a home and home with them every 3 or 4 years. I think it'd be fantastic. Oh, yeah. But we're about to welcome in a guy who played a few games against Southern Miss. Back then, they were a regular on the schedule. a wide receiver, another great wide receiver in ECU history. Mr. Hunter Gallimore. Hunter, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Kyle, how you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I hope you are.
I'm doing good. I hadn't heard Southern Miss in a while, but you're exactly right. That was a good rivalry back then when we played. And I know my senior year we played against Brett Favre, and he tore us up down there.
I remember the radio play-by-play because, you know, back then I listened to it on the radio every week, and hearing somebody say a you know, you didn't know who this guy was. Brett Favre. What the heck is a Favre?
Yeah.
We found out real quick what a Favre was.
Yep. He was good back then. He was good in the pros too.
he made a decent name for himself in the pros.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Hunter, we're going to talk about your career here at East Carolina. So we'll start off with the basics. Who recruited you out of high school, and how did you end up in Greenville?
That's a good good story. There is so coming out of high school, I was about 6 foot, about 150, and I made it to the East West game for North Carolina from Wilson, and I was really only getting recruited by small schools. Really small schools, and I couldn't even get a scholarship. And so all my buddies were moving down here to Wilmington to go to school. And I said, you know, I'm done with football. I'm just going to come down here to Wilmington and get an education and hang with all my high school buddies. And then during the summer, before I came down to Wilmington, we were supposed to come down to Wilmington, I got a call from East Carolina, and it was, it was Art Baker back then. And apparently whoever the coach was that was covering the Wilson area he was getting fired, and he did not tell East Carolina really about me. And so Art Baker called me up and was like, Hunter, we apologize. We did not know really much about you. We don't have any more scholarships left, but we would love to, for you to be a preferred walk-on. And I decided at the last second to give it a shot and come to Pirate Nation, and I'm glad I did. And so I decided not to come down to Wilmington. And the only other school that I came close to getting a scholarship, and believe it or not, was NC State.
Oh, wow.
And Sheridan called me. I never forget. Sheridan called me right before my senior year in high school, right before New Year's, and said, look, we got one scholarship left. We're going to give it to this guy down in Georgia. He's a receiver. And if he doesn't accept, it's your scholarship. And if he accepts, we'd like you to be a walk-on. And I, at that time, I just said, okay, if I get a scholarship, I'll go. If not, then I will just go to school down to UNCW. And not play football. And the guy ended up taking the scholarship and got kicked off within 2 years at State.
you think Sheridan remembered you after you caught that touchdown pass in the Peach Bowl?
During that week of the Peach Bowl, we had different activities and events in the evening times. And I reminded him during one of those events that he did not offer me one, and I'm so glad that he did not, because I'm glad that I ended up where I did.
So Talk a little bit about when Bill Lewis comes in. What was your first impressions when Bill Lewis got there?
He was a great motivator. He was a really good motivator when he came in. He brought a lot of talent on the coaching staff. You know, he had Mark Richt, that coached at Georgia. He was here for a little bit. And so, you know, and obviously he had Logan, you know, he brought Logan in. And so he did a great job motivating the team. And that was his strong, to me, that was his strong suit.
Yeah. And getting into that year, after you guys go down to Illinois, your senior year, lose that game. But, you know, I know people say there's no such thing as a good loss, but I feel like that loss motivated you guys and showed you guys we can play with anybody here. You know, we can play with anybody this year, and motivated you guys for the rest of the year. Was that the thinking from the whole team there?
You're exactly right. I mean, we felt like we could, you know, we don't know if they wouldn't have called that penalty, that excessive celebration penalty on us, if we would have won the game or not, but it sure would have put us in a much better position to win the game. And so we kind of felt like we got robbed of an opportunity, not robbed of the game, but just got robbed of an opportunity to see if we could win the game. And so, you know, obviously we did not score on that last drive. And, and I think it, you know, we were all pretty close. All the guys were pretty close. And so we did use that as a motivational tool for the rest of the season.
You talk about using the Illinois game as a motivational tool. At what point during that 91 season did you guys as a team realize how good you were, or did you know it going into that game?
No, I thought we were good, but I didn't think we were that good. And then, you know, the confidence just kept on growing throughout the year, obviously winning each game and the way that we won it and the teams that we beat, you know, Syracuse winning up there and coming back to flying into Kinston and having all the fans. I mean, it was, I never forget the pilot came on and said, "Hey, y'all gonna have a little surprise when you land. there's some people there." And we're like, "What? Really?" And so, you know, we landed and it was great. You know, there's just, you know, I don't know how many, hundreds and hundreds of people there when we got off the plane, which was great. And then, you know, we, you know, kind of had South Carolina at home win that. And so our confidence just kept on growing. And then obviously when we beat Pitt at home, and that was one of the one of the most exciting games. Besides the Peach Bowl, that was one of the most exciting games. And so I think right after that, we knew we could probably hang with anybody the rest, you know, on our schedule.
Two things from what you just said that I wanted to mention. You talk about flying back into Kinston and seeing the crowd and the pilot coming over and talking about all the people there. You know, hundreds of people. You know, I've seen videos, pictures years later. Think about it. This is 1991, guys. There's no social media. Right. There's no fifth quarter call-in show. How in the hell did that get organized?
That's a good question.
I don't know, but I tell you what, that was our first experience with something like that. And that was a huge boost to our confidence. And just, you're right, with no social media, how did everybody know to go to Kinston when we were flying in the middle of the night?
No, there had to be a lot of phone calls amongst Pirate fans. Like I said, there wasn't even a fifth quarter college show back then. So, and another thing, you mentioned that South Carolina game. You kind of had the put away touchdown in that game, didn't you?
I did. I still get, I did. We had a little 6 yard out called, and I was able to jet Blake threw the ball to me, and I was able to put a little move on the guy, and I ran down the sideline, and bless his heart, the Jeff Charles had never. I mean, he and I still every time I would see him, he always gives me, because he said on the announcement, he said, "Of all people, it's Hunter Gallimore running down the field for a touchdown." And he did. of all people, and he didn't mean it mean. He was just, and so he and I for 20 something years have joked about that every time I see him. He said, "Hey, Hunter Gallimore of all people."
Jeff was great. I'm glad you guys had that memory to joke back and forth with each other.
Yeah,
severely missed.
But that was a good that was a good win against South Carolina, because that was a huge rivalry against, you know, for us. And I had gotten walked down about a year before. We had did a trick play down in South Carolina, and I caught the ball, and I thought I had a touchdown, and the guy walked me down on the 5-yard line, and I caught so much grief from the coaches and everybody. So it was kind of good to get him back in Greenville.
This is a good question. Bubba may know the answer to this better than any of us three. But that South Carolina game, is that the first ever time the goalpost came down in Greenville? I'd love to know that. I know that they did after the South Carolina game, Hunter. I'm sure you remember that. But I wonder if that was the first time ever that happened. Bubba may have the answer to that, but we'll wait for him to tell us, and we'll move on. Stevie, go ahead, man.
So I've talked to a lot of guys from that Peach Bowl team, and one of the questions I ask all of them, you guys go, you get the big win over Virginia Tech, then you follow it up with end of the year, you beat Cincinnati. So you're 10-1. Are you guys worried? And I always look back at that 1983 team that lost three games by, what, like 13 points and didn't go to a bowl game. Are you guys worried that you're not going to get respect you feel like you deserve and get to a you know, there wasn't 50 bowl games back then. You know,
right.
You played on New Year's Day or after you were – that was the cream of the crop. Did you guys feel like we might get disrespected here and we might not make a New Year's Day bowl game?
I think you're right. You're exactly right, because back then it was – if you played on New Year's Day, that was
big.
Yeah, that was cream of the crop. And so, yes, we were kind of – I mean, I do think we were kind of a little nervous about that, if we were not going to get disrespected. I mean, you know, not get a good bowl game. And so I that did go through our mind. And so it was a pleasant surprise when they announced it, and especially against NC State.
When I heard that, I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be good here. And it did. It was. Talk a little bit about that atmosphere. Like, I always like to ask, when you came out of the tunnel that first time at the Peach Bowl, what was it like on that field? I mean, how electric was that field?
It was. It you know, all, you saw a bunch of Pirates, obviously a ton of Pirate fans, and that kind of – I mean, that did get us motivated. The fans through the whole season, you know, kept us motivated. And they continued it on down in the Peach Bowl. Great support down there, and just, it, you know, great atmosphere playing in Fulton County Stadium. The last, I believe we were the last game, football game ever played in that stadium. And so, you know, the fans really helped us out and got us motivated.
Hunter, one thing I've always wondered about the 91 season, the Peach Bowl, and I've asked several players, Dave Hart would probably be the person to have the answer to this question, but do you remember what other bowls, you know, there was about 25 bowls out there at the time. Do you remember what other bowl opportunities we had if we didn't get the Peach? I think the Peach was our biggest opportunity. But was the Independence Bowl or the Liberty Bowl ever brought up? Do you remember?
You know, that's a good question. I don't recall, tell you the truth. I think you're probably right, though. I mean, I think, you know, Liberty Bowl or something like that was probably in the back of our mind. But we were hoping for a much bigger bowl, which we got. So, But I can't recall right off the top of my head.
Okay. This is another question for Peach Bowl time. Okay. You're down 34-17 late in the game. What is being talked about in that huddle? I mean, you guys, obviously the whole We Believe theme that started after the Syracuse game and really hit its stride at Pitt. What are you guys saying in that game? Like, we can get back in this. Were you ever not confident you could come back and win that game?
We were confident the whole time. I knew we could come back. Our defense was playing great. and you know, which since our defense was playing so good, it got us motivated, knew that we needed to step our game up and play. We knew we had the talent on offense to score the points. I mean, we had Luke Fisher and Dion and Clayton and Jeff Blake and, you know, Daniels. I mean, we had Cedric Buren. I mean, we had tons of skill players that could put points on the board quickly. And so we just knew we had we knew we'd have an opportunity to do that because our defense put us in a good position.
Did you watch the field goal attempt by State?
Did
you watch
the field goal? I did. I did. So I had to watch it, but I was so glad to see it. Miss.
As somebody, you know, I kind of came on. That was around the time I was becoming a Pirate. I was a little younger than both of you guys. I probably got the worst health of the three. I was 11 years old, 91. And I know I never remember seeing East Carolina playing in a tie ball game. What is it like to end a game in a tie? It doesn't seem like it would be the worst. I guess in that situation, it would have felt more like a loss.
Yeah, I think, in our mind, it would have felt like a loss if we would have tied. You're exactly right.
I'll tell you this, Kyle, this is where I can bring some of my playing experience. This is nothing compared to a Peach Bowl game, but JV Conference Championship my eighth grade year, we played to an 8-8 tie in the championship game. And what tell me how this works now. We came back and we were down 8-0. Oh gosh, most from the second quarter on. And then we scored with like two or three minutes left in the game, tied it up, and had the ball driving down the field. Time ran out. So the referees go up to our coach, said, "Do you want to play overtime?" And of course, you know, it's a championship game. Yes. The other coach says no. They call the game because the other coach says no.
That's a forfeit. You guys win.
Yeah. How does that work? But they named us co-champion.
He forfeited. Y'all win. You're the champion. I mean, congratulations, Stevie. All these years later, I officially name you.
Thank you.
What county? What county is Lasker in?
Northampton County.
I officially name you eighth grade JV Northampton County State.
They made us co-champions, dude, and that was like we didn't, you know, from my seventh grade to ninth grade year, we never lost a game. And we tied that game. That would just leaves a bad – and it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. I mean, it's not fun at all.
Gosh.
Especially a championship game.
Stevie's been carrying that around since the eighth grade.
I have, man. I still talk to some of those guys that we play against. And I'm like, why did your coach call – just say you didn't want to play? I mean, come on. Okay, Hunter, I have to ask you about this. I'm a diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fan, have been for – oh, gosh, I was 5 years old, and I'm getting ready to turn 50 now. How about the battles in high school against Yancey Thigpen? Johnny Gardner is in here talking about that. What were those battles like against Yancey Thigpen?
You know, I haven't heard that name in a while, but you're exactly right. It was a good battle. My dad still gives me – likes to joke around with me or tell people when people bring that up is, you know, it wasn't Hunt against Northwest or – Southern Nash up there in Rocky Mount, but it was Gallimore versus Thigpen is what the when we played each other, because he had good stats and I had some, and he was a good guy, and I'm actually I've got multiple teams, but Steelers are one of mine for multiple reasons, but yeah, I was glad to see that he did well up there at the Steelers for a couple years. So, but he was a good guy. I enjoyed playing against him.
Okay, I got to ask now, what are the reasons, the multiple reasons you're a Steelers fan? I got to know this.
Well, so one of my best buddies I grew up with, he was a big Steelers fan, and unfortunately he passed away about 10 years ago. But before he passed away, he had always wanted to go to a game, and so I surprised him and went up to the Steelers, took him to the game. I still have pictures of he and I in Steelers gear, and so, anyways, that's one of the main reasons, because he was a Steelers fan, so I do follow them. And then Alex Highsmith from Wilmington here is, you know, he's doing so well. So obviously, I'm I'm really pulling for him. I was glad to see that he got a good contract this year, and he's the same age. My oldest daughter and him, they didn't go to the same high school here in Wilmington, but she was a cheerleader and she knew him. And so we kind of followed his career a little bit. And so he is, so we're really proud of, you know, that what he's done up in Steelers Nation. Yeah. And then my, the bank I work for, their headquarters is out of Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. You don't get any free tickets to Steelers games, do you?
No, I've been to a couple Pirates games, but I'm still waiting for them to give me some Steelers games. I'll let you know. If I get some Steelers game, I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know. But, you got anything else, Kyle?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Hunter, you know, after you win that Peach Bowl, just in general, talk about the atmosphere in Greenville that year, what it was like. You know, you guys not only is it the best team still in East Carolina history, you guys kind of became, you know, you guys were Boise State and TCU and Utah, mm-hmm. all these schools that would do it later and crash the BCS, or Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati in recent years. Unfortunately, all of them crashed it and then got to move up into bigger conferences. But you guys, we did it at East Carolina with that 91 team before anybody else did, that weren't a traditional blue blood, that was an outsider, so to speak, that made it up to that New Year's Day bowl game. Talk about that aspect, you know, that in East Carolina, so to speak, had never done that in the modern era. And just what the atmosphere was like in Greenville. You guys were freaking celebrities.
No, it was great, I tell you. But you're right. We were doing that before Boise State and all them did it. And so, you know, we did get some, you know, we got some respect being number nine, finishing number nine in the nation. And I still love to say that. And I'm very proud of that and what our team did. And when we came back, I mean, you know, they threw a, you know, Greenville threw us a parade, and everybody, just the whole fans have been fantastic during that time. We'd go out to dinner. My wife now, my girlfriend back then, we'd go out to dinner, and it was, you know, people would come up to us, and we still have people come up to us. You know, people remember that season, and I'm involved down here in Wilmington. You know, I go to the local Pirate Club meetings here, and so it's still brought up quite a bit, and which I'm happy to talk about it and very proud. And but the fans just have treated all of us very special through the years.
Hunter, we appreciate your contributions and everybody on that 91 team, and you'll never be forgotten. But I hope one day the day comes where we have a team to talk about that finally push that team as a memory, instead of everybody trying to live up to those expectations.
Kyle, I agree with you. I agree. I hope that day is, you know, come soon, because I would love to see it.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, though, you know, Hunter made the trip to the Big House, and what was it like at the Big House? First of all, what was the atmosphere like at the Big House before we talk anything about the game?
The atmosphere was good. You know, it was, I went up there with some buddies and came home, told my kids and my wife. They asked me how it was. And I said, you know, the tailgating was great. Being in the game, the fans that we were sitting around, we were sitting fairly close to the field. And so we were surrounded by Michigan fans, and everybody was very polite to us. Tailgating people would come up and say, you know, hey, welcome to the Big House, and welcome to Ann Arbor. And so they were good. But, you know, obviously they didn't feel threatened by us. So they,
right.
I mean, if we were Ohio State, they probably wouldn't be doing
it. Yeah, it would have been a whole lot different.
But you know, it was everybody downtown Ann Arbor was nice the whole weekend we were there. The one thing that I'll say, and Michigan fans will probably shoot me, but, you know, it was a great experience to be there and say, hey, I've been to the Big House. But that field is just is interesting, because when you walk up, and, you know, I played at some, you know, South Carolina, you walk up and you see that stadium, seat 90,000. I mean, you just see it coming up from the ground, and it's impressive. Even in McGreenville, I mean, you see our stadium. It's impressive. Virginia Tech, because you see the stadium from the ground up.
Yeah, there's dug in the ground.
There's dug in the ground. And I, you know, honestly, I did not realize that there's their field. So what you see when you come walking up to the ground level are the four as a four story press box. And that's what you see. It looked like an office building. And so that's what you see. And then you walk down into the hole and then you're in that big fishbowl. But it's, I mean, it's impressive to be there with 110, but it just didn't have the wow factor when you walk up to it just because you didn't see it. You couldn't see how big it is.
Yeah, we had a Michigan, I don't remember what publication he was from. He was some beat writer, really nice guy, on from Michigan a few weeks ago. And he told us that in advance, that when we walk up to the stadium, we're going to be shocked that it does not look big at all from the outside. And that what you described, when you walk down in it, then you see the size of it. But from the outside, it's not impressive.
Yep, yep. So. Hey. But it was good. I mean, I'm glad I went, and I wish we could have, you know, our defense looked good. Offense, I think, has got a little work to do, but yeah. I think, you know, I think they had it. They'll be prepared this week against Marshall and for the rest of the season.
Yeah, let's hope so. Need to try to get a vic this weekend. Ain't nobody going to be taking any moral victories from the Marshall game, so this is, you know, win or lose time. Yep. But, Stevie, did you have anything else for Hunter?
That's it. I just want to thank you, Hunter, for coming on. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on and talk to us for a little while.
No worries. Hey, I appreciate you all three, and thanks for having me on, and I'll be glad to talk anytime.
All right.
Appreciate it, Hunter.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Well, Stevie, we'll do a couple more things here before we get the show over with. Everybody stay tuned, because everybody's favorite part of Just Another Sports Podcast is still to come. It's our top five. It's going to be the top five favorite wide receivers in ECU history, which may be the toughest list we've done yet.
There's a lot of honorable mentions, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I didn't do as many honorable mentions on mine. In fact, now that I look here, I see I did a top four. I left somebody out. I don't know who
I had a tie.
So I got it. I see who I left out. It was actually my number one. I forgot to put it up there. I just mentally, but
yeah, you know.
All right, so we'll go ahead and do that. Then we're going to break down the Marshall game briefly. But so we're going to do this from 5-1. Stevie, we're going to start off at number five. My number five favorite wide receiver in ECU history, and he would be higher on the list because he did set the all-time receiving record, but he can't be any higher because – old Scotty Moe, he didn't play on very good teams at the end of his career. But Zay Jones obviously set the single season receiving record all-time receiving record, whatever it was. He's in the NCAA record,
yeah.
Yeah, at East Carolina. He broke Justin Hardy's record that had it before him. So number five on my list is Zay Jones.
He'll come up later in my list. Number five for me, favorite. And I'll put this guy there, not just because of his performance at ECU, but he also, you know, my daughter, her first ECU game was the Carolina 70-41 game. Mm-hmm. And we're walking around outside the stadium before the game. And this guy comes up and, you know, this is a big game. You know, this is the Carolina game. So you want to show out this, but Trayvon Brown came out in uniform and sat there and took pictures with my daughter, and you know, she immediately became a big fan of him. I think he caught, was it two touchdowns that day? And
Trayvon Brown's a guy that he completely flipped my damn mind, Stevie. I mean, holy crap.
I mean, he, you know, we were, you know, the people that were with us, and we were telling her, I said, you must have gave him been a good luck charm for him. He caught two right there early in the game.
Well, to be fair, I think I called a touchdown pass in that game.
I'll tell you this. What's his name? Kurt Binkert? You remember he was the backup?
Yeah.
I saw him on TikTok. He's on TikTok. And he does, like, he plays, like, Madden live, and he explains a lot of things on there. And he was live the other night, and I put up there, ECU 70, UNC 41. He said – and he glanced over there. He said, yeah. He said, I scored the last touchdown of that game.
He did. We won 70, and he sure did. And would have been a great quarterback here. Ended up doing well at UVA and played in the league for about 2 years.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, injury, and then they fired Ruffin. All right, so number four on my list, I got a guy who I remember, I believe it was the 90s. God, I'm horrible remembering years sometimes. I believe it was the 97 season. At the time, he set the single season receiving record for East Carolina. A guy who I remember always being a deep ball threat and just a ball hawk. If you got the ball near him, he was going to catch it. So number four on my list is Troy Smith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I know another Troy Smith. That's why that was always kind of interesting for me to see Troy Smith out there on the field. He was actually my basketball coach in middle school.
But a different one.
Yeah, you know, well, not obviously, the age would, obviously, I mean, yeah. He would be, it would be pretty weird to see, a guy.
Stevie, I forget how much older you are than me.
So, number four, I got a tie. And no, not blow it. And I could have done it while he was in here, but he was one of them. I always thought he was the working man's receiver that year for that 91 team. Managed to make some big plays when we needed it, big time plays when we needed it. Scored that touchdown right before the half in the Peach Bowl, but Hunter Gallimore. And then on the other side is probably, I guess receiver / kick returner, Dwayne Harris. I mean, explosive. We had a lot of explosive players during that time, you know, between Dwayne and Chris Johnson. I mean, but Dwayne would be tied for number four with me with Hunter Gallimore.
Yeah, two very good choices there. Dwayne will be coming up later on my list. And number, where are we at? Three. And number three here, I got a guy that became a hell of a man, great high school football coach down in Florida, played for the Miami Dolphins. The man who pulled the yellow towel out of his pants and waved it around in the end zone against NC State in 1996, got a penalty, and Steve Logan never let it live it down. One of my favorite wide receivers of all time, Mr. Larry Shannon.
Yeah, was he trying to do like the Pittsburgh Steeler deal?
He just had it in his head he was going to do that, and it got the crowd hyped up. But we got a penalty for it, but it didn't matter.
Well, anyway, my number three, and this is a guy.
No comments on Larry Shannon. You know, Larry Shannon.
Yeah, he was. I mean, you pretty much said it all. I mean, played with what the Dolphins and I believe the Raiders, goes on to have a pretty good NFL career. Yep. But you said it all about Larry Shannon. I mean, he was a big time receiver for ECU. Yep. Number three for me though. You can tell I've been a Pirate fan since what, 82, but that 91 team left a big impression on me. And this guy, not just because of how he played on the field, but I, you know, got to talk to him on the Final Score on my other podcast, and just a great guy. I mean, he's checked on, you know, when my wife was sick in the hospital, he called to check on me. To check on me several times. You know, when I was sick with COVID, he called to check on me. I'm talking about Deion Johnson. Awesome. I mean, and you know, only played 2 years at ECU, but I think he was one of the heroes of that Peach Bowl team. Of course, the punt return late in that game against NC State, and the Peach Bowl would set up another score. But yeah, Deion, not just because of the player, because of the person. And I think a lot of Deion.
No, yeah, I like that he called you about your wife and when you had COVID. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, Deion was very, very electric player, big playmaker. Hey, what appropriate name, Deion, huh? At not prime time, but pretty damn near it. Number two on my list is a guy who's a walk-on. We had two other walk-on receivers on the show tonight.
Yeah,
that ended up being a scholarship guy and set some NCAA records under the Lincoln Riley offense in the slot. This dude was a beast, and that would be Mr. Justin Hardy. Justin Hardy, number two on my list.
Justin is going to come up in just a few minutes with me. So I think I just gave away who my number one was. But anyway, number two, you talked about him earlier, Zay Jones. I mean, you're talking about two guys that benefited greatly from that Lincoln Riley offense. Set the NCAA record for receptions. Having a pretty good pro career. You know, he's up there in Jacksonville now. So hopefully him and Trevor Lawrence can start hooking up for you Jacksonville fans. But, Zay Jones is my number two.
Yeah, Tony Khan actually just heard he was friends with CM Punk and fired him. wrestling fans will get that. Nobody else will.
Yes.
Number one on my list, in my opinion, and opinions vary, the best football player I've ever seen in East Carolina, and that'd be Dwayne Harris. From a competitive standpoint, from a playmaking standpoint, from just individual effort standpoint, whether it was at receiver, whether it was special teams, punt returner, kick returner, I even used a running back a time or two, but primarily a wide receiver. Dwayne Harris is I think, the best player in the history of ECU football. And I know a lot of people are going to turn their nose up and disagree with that, but he's got to be in the top 10, just period, best players to ever play here. Just a competitor, just relentless, and would always step up in big games.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like I said, explosive and could do it so many different ways. I mean, and the professional team saw that too. Yep. They saw that speed. They saw he could do so many different things. And, you know, Dwayne Harris, when he got in the pros, and especially about kick returner, punt returner, he was always a threat to go all the way. And, I mean, I won't turn my nose up at what you said about he could be the best player in Pirate history. I won't turn my nose up at
that. And can you remember his hometown and tell me what wrestler is from his hometown?
Where is he from?
Well, you'll know the wrestler once I tell you the hometown.
Okay.
Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Jake the Snake.
You got it.
Yeah, of course.
And who is your number one Stevie? I think we already know.
Justin Hardy. I mean, what a great story. A guy comes on as a walk-on, gets a scholarship, and, you know, works his butt off and gets that scholarship, and then goes on to set the NCAA record for receptions. And I honestly, to this day, when he went to Atlanta, when he got – I don't know if he got drafted or was signed by Atlanta – I wish he would have had a chance that first year to go to a team that didn't have so much depth at wide receiver. I mean, you had Julio Jones, you had Roddy White, there was somebody else there too. He was played a lot of special teams, but I would love to have seen him get a chance to be, you know, maybe in that wide receiver three or wide receiver two, and work his way up. I think with his work ethic and the way he could catch, I think he would have made a career for himself in the NFL.
Yeah, and he did, but I think it would have been a longer career.
Oh yeah, it would have been longer.
Yeah. So we'll do the honorable mentions. I didn't do very many honorable mentions on my list. It would have went on forever. So I
guess, I'm gonna narrow them down.
Yeah, I just did a couple here. Andre Allison.
That's one right there.
He might have been my top five if it wasn't for him deciding he was just going. You know, this was before people sat out bowl games.
Yeah.
But he would have benefited us better if he'd have sat out that bowl game rather than just decide not to contribute like he did
through the motions. Florida.
Yeah, but so he's on my honorable mention list. And I could have, you know, all these other receivers that I could have named, I just added one more. And this is a personal favorite. Nobody else would have him on their list. Bobby Good. I love Bobby Good. Bobby Good will, you know, at the end of the John Thompson era, the beginning of the Skip Holtz era, that 05 season, besides Andre Allison, he was about our only receiver that was worth it. But no offense to anybody else that was on that 05 team, but you know, old Bobby Good, a white boy, you know, fun facts here, he is the nephew of Rick Stockstill. I don't know how many people realize that, but Middle Tennessee head coach. But old Bobby Good was one of my favorite Pirates. I loved the way he played the game. He didn't have breakaway speed, but if you got the ball near him, he would catch it. He had great hands.
Yeah. I'll just quickly go through a couple of here. Damon Grayson was a great one too. Terrence Copper,
T Cop. Yeah, we both may be remiss leaving T Cop out of our list there.
Clayton Driver. That's another one that from that Peach Bowl team that didn't get his name called out a lot, like the rest of those guys, like maybe a Dion or Luke or Hunter, but Clayton Driver was a big part of that offense as well.
Absolutely.
Bubba's naming off some. This will be a good one for you. I know you remember this guy, Mitchell Galloway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought he was coming on the show tonight.
I wasn't going to say that. You guys got to realize all week we've been talking about Hunter coming on. And every time Kyle mentions when we were talking about it, he said, Mitchell Galloway, you going to get in touch with Mitchell Galloway. Maybe I need to get in touch with Hunter Gallimore. Maybe I do Mitchell Galloway. Maybe we need to call Mitchell Galloway. And you'll call him Hunter Gallimore.
Yeah, right. Anybody who's listened to this show long enough knows names are not my strength. I will get names mixed up, people confused. I obviously know the difference between Mitchell Galloway and Hunter Gallimore, but just for whatever reason.
See, I'm just doing it right then.
Yeah, I know. It's
he's got Marcellus Harris, Jason Nichols, and Lamont Chappell.
Lance Ray, Lance Lewis.
What about Walter Wilson? That's a little earlier Pirates. That may be before your time.
Yeah, I know the name, but could not say anything about it. Well, we're going to talk about receivers before our time. We would be remiss if we didn't forget to name Mr. Terry Gallagher. So we're talking about great wide receivers in ECU history. Yes. We've got to talk about from the Independence Bowl.
That's before my time, too. But I just named guys that, you know, I went from the 82 on.
Right.
You know, you had the Adams brothers too. Stephon, who goes on to have a pretty good career in the NFL, and then Amos Adams was another one. I always remember the Adams brothers. There was three of them: Calvin, Stephon, and Amos that played at ECU. I think it was three. I think all three were brothers.
Now, Bubba would know that.
Bubba, you know that for sure.
He if he don't, he'll know somebody that will.
I know two of them. At least two of them were brothers. Cam Worthy had a short career. That's right, but he had two excellent games.
Yeah,
Virginia Tech and Florida.
And Birmingham. That Virginia Tech game was Cam Worthy's show.
Wasn't he the one that got suspended before the the Carolina game that year, the 70-41 game?
That sounds right, Stevie. That sounds right. I don't remember. We had so many damn receivers in, it didn't matter.
See, Johnny Gardner's in here. He named Amos Adams up here. Walter Wilson. I don't know who LL is.
Lance Lewis.
Lance Lewis, Keith Stokes, and Clayton Driver.
Oh, my God. Keith Stokes. Yes. Keith Stokes only played 2 years here, junior college player. Another great special teams player. Keith Stokes with the go-ahead touchdown against Miami in 99. Yeah, Keith Stokes definitely needs to be mentioned.
And I may be wrong, Bubba. Tell me if I'm wrong, but with Cam Worthy out, wasn't that why Trayvon was starting that game? I may be wrong because Bubba's up here. We hung 70 without Worthy. So, but yeah, wasn't Trayvon taking Cam Worthy's spot? I may be wrong on that. And that worked out pretty good.
Baby, we played so many receivers in those days. I remember guys like, I think Brandon Bishop had a touchdown, the reception in that game. It was like I told you, I called a touchdown pass, but I dropped it. So, you know, it was
Shane goes deep first possession to Trayvon on post route for first 6 points of the game. So,
there you go.
I've watched that game several times.
Yeah, no, me too. So, guys, Bubba promoting Team Boneyard there. Yeah, Jeff. So, join the team behind the team, join Team Boneyard. Give to East Carolina's NIL. If you want us to compete in this new age of college football, we have got to have money for NIL. I've joined Team Boneyard. You can join for as little as $10 a month. You have $10 a month won't even buy you a combo at McDonald's hardly anymore. So you might as well go pay some football players with it. So join Team Boneyard today. Join Team Boneyard today. Join Team Boneyard today. Easy for me to say. Stevie, as we quickly we'll break down the Marshall game a little bit before we get out of here. Thunder and Herd coming to Greenville this weekend. They struggle with Albany out of the gates. Looked very vanilla on offense. Think they were trying to get out of that game without showing their hand. One thing we do know they have is their running back, Ali. He played against us in 21. He was injured most of last year, back this year. He's a hell of a running back. They like to go tempo. The big thing about them, if you can keep Ali in check, it slows their tempo down. But that's what they want to do. They want to run Ali, and they want to go tempo. Their defense is really solid. I think it's a tough matchup. I think it's a tougher matchup than people realize, not that anybody is overlooking Marshall. They are a 3-point favorite. But you know, I think the biggest difference between us and them is they know who they are. They have an identity. We have not figured out who we are yet as a football team. Going to be playing two quarterbacks still. You know, we're going to need to play really good on defense. We're going to need to play error-free football on offense, which is going to be hard playing two different quarterbacks. And we're going to need to play well on special teams to come away with this win. I think it's going to be a low-scoring ball game. Most people do the over-under 46. I know Matt's taking the over. He thinks we're going to score more points as well as Marshall. What do you see about this game?
Yeah, I mean, most people I look at, you know, Marshall, I think they're favored by, what, three now?
Yeah.
So most people are thinking it's going to be like a 24-21 or 24-20 game. Pick it whichever way you want to. I'm like you, Kyle. We've got our defense, and they're going to be up-tempo. Not good. Thankfully, it's not going to be as hot as it has been this week. So it'll be 81 degrees at kickoff. I think our offense is the key here. What we can do on offense, we got to have some confidence from one of those quarterbacks. And you know, granted, we were playing Michigan, the number two team in the nation last week, but still, you got to come out there, get the nerves out, and go ahead. And the running game at the end looked good. Maybe we need to lean on that running game a little bit more than we did, and let whoever's in there at quarterback, whether it's Garcia or Flynn, you know, get in a groove, throw some short passes, get in a groove, and get his confidence up before we go deep a little bit. But that offense is going to have to play a mistake-free game, and our defense played the way they did against the run last week. This I know Ollie had 137 rushing yards last week against Albany, but I think they can shut him down. Pass defense last week against Michigan, of course, you're going up against what probably could be four or five All-Americans right there on the offensive line. Couldn't get much pressure. That's a tough task for your secondary. When you don't get pressure, that secondary can't keep running around when you've got all day back there. But I think it's going to be a competitive game. I'm going to go with the majority. Well, not majority, but I guess the minority. But the final score, I think ECU 24, Marshall 20.
24-20. I'm not sure what the final score will be. I hadn't decided that just yet. I'm predicting overtime. We've had four overtime games in this series. GMAC Bowl 08, 2011, 2012 all went to overtime. So I'm predicting a fifth overtime game in this series. I'm not sure what the score will be, but I'm predicting the Pirates win it in overtime. Big special teams play. I got a feeling. Whether it's a kickoff return for a touchdown, a block punt, or a long field goal, I got a feeling a big special teams play is gonna come into play this week.
Our special teams played great last week.
They did, and it was good to see. That was our weak point last year, and glad to see coach and staff turn that around. Got to though when you don't know what you are on offense, you know Logan used to always say to win a football game you had to win special teams and something else, either offense or defense.
Yeah,
that was his philosophy. You had to win two of the three phases of the game. So that's
the only thing that bothers me about this. And you know, I listened. Listened to the entire game streaming. The Pirate Radio Network did a great job. It was a great first game for that group. It's not going to be Jeff Charles, of course, but. They did a great job doing the play-by-play. Bubba's talking about Javis Bond has over 100 total yards of offense this week. Now, I'll tell you this.
I agree.
The end of the game, the third in the fourth quarter, he showed that speed. He showed that speed last week, and I think he's going to be a big weapon. That's why I'm saying maybe we need to lean on the running game a little bit more at first.
I think we're going to see a lot of two back this week. We saw some of it against Michigan. I think we're going to see a lot of it this week. I think we're going to see a lot of two back sets.
Bond had 47 total yards on 7 touches last week. So
It means he needs to be touching the ball more.
Yeah, he does need to get the ball more. So I think he's going to be a weapon we can use the rest of the year from what I saw against Michigan.
Yeah, and that running back room, that is one room that has some depth. So the fact that he got that much playing time as a true freshman week one shows how damn good he is, and he's going to be fun to watch here in East Carolina, hopefully for 4 years, but in this day and age, who knows how long.
Never tell.
Yeah. Well, Steve, you got anything else?
No. I mean, going to be there. First time I've been to a Pirate game in a few years.
Okay, so you're going to be at the game Saturday.
Yeah, me and my daughter will be there Saturday. So if you guys see me around, I don't know if you recognize this ugly mug, but if you see me around, be sure to come up and talk to me. We'll talk some Pirate football for a little while.
Yes, Stevie, I'll get with you off the air, see if we can get together at the game, hang out for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
But I look forward to seeing you Saturday at the game and the rest of Pirate Nation. Hopefully, we'll have a good turnout. Weather right now, it's down to a 30% chance of rain last I saw. Yeah. So let's hope that keeps going down. Yeah. I want it to be completely cloudy with a 0% chance of rain. That would be
perfect. That would be nice.
That would be perfect. Although a little rain doesn't bother me when it's warm out, as long as it ain't a torrential downpour to feel good. Yeah. But just bring your ponchos and come to the game, guys. Don't
be
let
prepared.
The weather. Yeah, don't. We're not talking about monsoons or thunderstorms. We're talking about a little rain. It's going to be warm. Bring a poncho and have some fun. So, Steve, if you ain't got nothing else, we'll wrap her up.
Yeah.
And we'll be back.
Let's talk about some of the other shows we got going on.
We got to? All right, there we go. We got Sunny. We got Sonny and some. I thought that already happened.
Aired earlier tonight. They had their week two picks.
Okay, it's a week two picks. So go back. That's in the archives. Sonny and Semenza, week two picks. That is in the archives. You can check that out. Listen to it whenever you want to. We got the Pirate preview. That'll be tomorrow night. Or did we do that last night?
That was Tuesday night. Had Keith Morehouse from WSAZ TV in Huntington.
Yeah, I remember. I talked to him. I was on there.
Maybe it was Mitchell Galloway. I don't know.
Yeah. So, we had Morehead on from up in the television station there at Marshall. Great guest. He's always a good guest. We've had him on several times. And also, this has already happened. This is in our archives. We have Absolute Empowerment, Jeff Connor show. It was Monday night. You can check it out in our archives. T-Cop was on there. And go back and listen to that. Each and every week, Jeff Connors has a great guest on. Check out Absolute Empowerment with Jeff Connors. And this week it was Terrence Copper. And subscribe. Please subscribe on YouTube. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe on Twitter or whatever you do on Twitter. X, whatever it's called.
It's X.
And we got TikTok. Subscribe on TikTok. But primarily YouTube, man. We put up YouTube is a great place where a lot of people get this content. If you're watching on YouTube, you already know that. If you listen to it on a podcast feed, we appreciate that. But if you ever want a video feed, we are up on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We would really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely check us out. And be sure to share with everybody that you think's a Pirate fan. Or just if you're a sports fan, be sure to share us with you. Likes, follow, comment, and subscribe. YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah, and I'll share a little more content. We got episode 2 of The Coach's Kid came out this week, this past Monday night. We interviewed the daughter of Terry Holland, Kate. I think that was a fantastic interview.
Great interview.
If you haven't listened to it yet, go listen to it. Also, the previous week, the interview with Terry Bowden, son of Bobby Bowden. That's also up there, episode 1 of The Coach's Kid. And Friday night, we have Martin County High School football live here on the air. I believe it's a 6:30 airtime, Bubba. Correct me if I'm wrong. And, I don't even know who they play, but you can, there's promoting the Coach's Kid, but, great episode with Kate Holland Baynard. I'm not quite sure how you say her last name.
Baynard.
Thank you, brother. There's Bubba's voice out of nowhere.
But, out of nowhere.
She was absolutely wonderful. Tremendous. Gave a lot of great insight on her dad. And it's really nice. What I took away from that interview, I had a lot of respect and admiration of Terry Holland, and it was nice to confirm that Terry Holland was the man I thought he was.
Hey, how much would you pay for a pair of those pants up there in that older picture?
No doubt.
That was a thing back then, though. Check out the coach sitting there on the sidelines with his suit, too. Oh, man.
Yeah, check that out that head full of retro. Hair.
Retro, buddy.
Yeah, check out Coach Holland's head full of dark hair there.
Look, I was watching, when he was coach at Virginia, he was not well-liked in my house. My mom is a diehard Carolina basketball fan, And yeah, she would, you know, they, back in the days with Ralph Sampson, Othell Wilson was got my mom as close to saying a cuss word as I've ever heard before in my life. So yeah, but he instantly became Terry Holland instantly became a good guy when he transferred over to ECU. No offense to Virginia, but my mom, I looked at him like, oh yeah, he's at ECU. Okay, I can deal with that now. I can deal with him now. He's a great guy. So it's funny how changing colors makes people think different things of people.
Yeah, no doubt. And like Kyle mentioned, we will have Martin County football on Friday night. So 6:40.
Bubba, I don't know what happened with me there for a minute there, but I could not do anything. I was totally frozen, but yeah, go ahead.
It was saying your device for some reason was not available to reconnect as far as bringing you back on air, but we're good to go now. But 6:40 airtime as Martin County is hosting Southside, the Seahawks coming to Williamston, and Dave and Harold Robinson will have that call for you. Again, 6:40 airtime, 7:00 kickoff on Friday night.
I thought Dave said somebody was filling in for this week, Bubba. Has that changed?
I believe that was last week when he was headed to Ann Arbor, but you may be correct. He may be not on the call on Friday night. He may have somebody filling in for him. But last week, I know before the game got canceled, when it looked like the game was going to be played Thursday night, he was on the road to Ann Arbor. So Phil Woolard was going to call the game with someone.
Okay.
Coach Robinson. I can't remember.
Either way, just tune in Friday night if you want to hear Martin County football. Somebody will be calling the game. So, all right, guys. Well, if we ain't got nothing else, I'll wrap this thing up for Stevie Fly, Andrew Bodenheimer, Hunter Gallimore, Mitchell Galloway, and Bubba Rosenbaum. I am Kyle Barber, and this has been just another sports podcast here on the Sports Objective Network. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
See ya.